Hi, welcome to our third episode of Denizen, where we tell the stories of people who inhabit this earth. I'm your host, Morgan. Today, we will talk to Michelle.
Hi, my name is Michelle. I was born in Colombia, South America, and I moved here 17 years ago, almost 18 years ago.
I met Michelle through church about a year and a half ago. I volunteered with her husband and was friends with her daughter. One day, I was talking to her husband, Scott, and he was telling me a little bit about her story and how she came to the U.S., and instantly, I knew I wanted to interview her. Michelle is a gorgeous woman who has a super perky voice and an awesome Colombian accent. The day of the interview, we met at Michelle's house and had a bunch of cookies and desserts, and Scott made us some pretty gourmet drinks with his fancy milk frother. Side note, I don't know why I always say what we ate, but food always makes things better, and food is awesome. So, enough said. Anyways, let's get on with Michelle's story.
I grew up in Colombia. Of course, I was born in the capital, Bogota, and I moved a lot throughout my childhood. My dad was a pharmaceutical sales guy, so we had to move for his job quite a bit. I lived in I don't even know how many cities. Some of them were bigger than others. Most of them were big, with a lot of people. And some of them, like Bogota, is up in the mountains, and I lived at other ones that were by the coast. I went to several different schools. Most of them were Catholic schools with just girls. All the schools that I went to in Colombia had uniforms. That was one pretty cool thing. And then when I was 14, my aunt lived here in Wisconsin, and my dad wanted me to learn English, so then he sent me here kind of like an exchange student, but I was with my aunt, and I lived here for a year, and then I went back to Colombia.
So did you go to school
here?
Here?
Yeah, I went to school here in Newburgh for a year. I was a freshman when I came here.
So did you know any English when you came?
No, not at all.
So you started at a high school not knowing any English.
Yeah, it was pretty difficult. I remember, one thing I remember is sitting in class and everybody getting up and going someplace, and I had no idea where everybody was going because I didn't understand. They said something through the speaker.
Right.
I had no idea where everybody was. Like, I remember following people quite a bit because I had no idea what I was supposed to do. I went to the Spanish teacher a lot to ask her what was going on because I had no idea what anybody was saying.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So did they have in ESL?
No.
I was going to say, not
at that time.
At that time.
Mm-mm. No, they didn't have an ESL. It was just forced to learn, pretty much.
So did your aunt speak good English?
Yeah, my aunt, she had been living here for over 20 years, married my cousins.
Oh, okay.
Went to the same school, but it wasn't in classes with them or anything, so.
Right.
Yeah.
So, after the year, did you speak fairly good English?
I did. Of course, it wasn't perfect. A year is not really enough. But I did. I mean, I was able to communicate with people and attend classes. And then I went back to Colombia, and when you don't use it, pretty much. I mean, it doesn't go completely away, but you forget. Like, right now there's words in Spanish that I can't remember because I've been living here for so long. But yeah, so I went back to Colombia, and I graduated from high school there, and I wanted to be a doctor. So I went to medical school, and there was a lot of personal family issues going on at the time, and I decided I just wanted to quit school and move to the United States. So my dad said okay, and I moved here in Yeah, 2000. It was Valentine's Day when I moved here. And I was going to go to school here for something. I didn't know what, because I didn't want to be a doctor anymore. But I came here on a tourist visa. So I couldn't go to school until I got a student visa. So I really didn't do anything for a while. And my parents were just sending me money. And I wasn't doing anything. And then I ended up going to school to be a medical assistant. And that went on maybe, I don't know, for about a year until my parents decided to move here with me.
Okay.
My dad being a pharmaceutical sales guy, he had to travel a lot. Of course, we had to move, and he had to travel on his own, driving different places. And Colombia has what is called guerrillas. They have it's kind of like their own made-up military that goes against the real military of Colombia. They cause a lot of problem in Colombia. My dad traveling, he had a lot of encounters with them because they need medicines for when they get sick. They want money. So he was threatened several times to give them things. On one occasion, he had two of them get in his car, and they had grenades, and they were like, if you don't take us this place, we don't care if we die. So there was just a lot of situations like that, and my parents felt that they would be, that they were in danger, so then they came here. They came here with their tourist visa. We all were blessed to have a tourist visa because it's pretty hard to get, but they came here with their tourist visa, and then when they arrived here, then they applied to get asylum.
So how do you get a tourist visa?
You have to go to the American Embassy in Colombia and apply for it. However, if you don't have a job, if you don't have money, if you don't have what they call a reason to go back, they won't give you a visa.
A reason to go back to Colombia.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, they don't want you to stay here.
Right.
So they want to make sure that you're going to go back. Just to give an example, my grandma, she doesn't have a job. She doesn't have money. And a lot of her kids are in the United States. So for her, it was really difficult to get a visa because they couldn't find a reason that she would go back. However, she finally got it, and she's gone back every year. She doesn't want to stay here. She says she's too old to move here, and she doesn't speak English. So it's really, really hard to get a visa. I have cousins, aunts, and uncles that haven't been able to because of that reason. And they don't have any intention of staying here. They just can't get it. I hear a lot of people saying, when people come here illegally and they work, well, why don't they come here legally? Well, there is no way to come here legally. You can't just say, oh, I want to go work.
Right.
I don't have money. I need to go work. You can't. It's not.
There's no legal way to come. Right.
No.
Michelle's family came to the U.S. about a year after Michelle did. Once her family arrived in the U.S. with their tourist visas, they applied to get asylum status. Michelle tried to be listed under her family, but couldn't because she was too old.
Because I was over 21 when I came here, I tried to go in the asylum with them, but then I couldn't because I was too old to be part of my family anymore, and I was denied the asylum for myself, and they weren't. So I had my student visa, and then essentially at some point I was without a status here in the United States. I wasn't allowed to be here under a tourist visa or a student visa anymore. So think it was, 2002 when I got married to Scott, and that's when I could apply to be legal again.
So you had just let your visas expire and hope mm-hmm. that you were not going to get caught.
I was going through, appealing the asylum process. So it wasn't, fully illegal, but...
Because you were waiting for your asylum
status to be... Yeah, they denied it, but I kept
Because it was through the appeals. It.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how long... when your parents applied for asylum, how long did that process take? From the time they applied?
It took a few years. From the time they got here until the time they were able to go to Colombia, when everything was completely finalized, it was about 10 years.
Wow, 10 mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. So that whole... time in between, they were allowed to be here because it was still pending, their asylum status was pending, and it just didn't get settled for that long. Mm-hmm. So what do they all have to do other than the original, they applied for it?
So they applied for it, they had to go to several interviews, they had to provide evidence that they were in danger in Colombia, which sometimes is really hard to do. How do you have evidence of that? And they had to hire attorneys, and I say 10 years because that's when they became citizens. So their asylum per se was granted before the 10 years, okay. But
they did choose to become citizens then.
Yeah.
Do you have to become a citizen if your asylum is granted?
No, you don't have to ever become a citizen, right. but yeah, they definitely wanted to. So,
are you a citizen?
Mm-mm.
No.
So I was living in Miami, and my dad came to visit my aunt. That's his sister, my aunt, the one I lived with here. He came to visit her, and my husband, Scott, was going to the same church as my aunt. And my dad wanted to see if he wanted to move here with all of us. So he met Scott, and they became friends. My dad was here for maybe a month. And then Scott was planning a trip to Miami with his friends, so... I met him there, and then...
Well, you met Scott in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Miami. So you were going to school in Miami?
Mm-hmm.
So who were you living with there, or were you on your own?
I was on my own until my parents moved there. So I was on my own, then my parents moved there.
To Miami.
To Miami to be with me, and then my parents and my siblings. And then my dad came to be with my aunt to see if he... liked it here better than Miami. My parents knew they didn't want to stay in Miami because they didn't know English, and if you're not immersed in it, you're not going to learn it. Okay. So.
And you can totally get by in Miami without knowing English.
Yeah, so they didn't want that. So my dad wanted to move up north someplace, and... then that's when he met Scott. Scott went to visit us. That was in January, and we got married that year in June. It took me about 9 years after I got married to finally get married.
Really?
Yes.
So what was that whole, what did you have to do for that whole process?
So I had to apply, and because I was going through the asylum, then it was all messed up in immigration. Immigration processes are not simple. Sometimes they are, but for the most part, they're not. So it's kind of like whoever is working there doesn't talk to the next person. So it's like a whole mess up. So I was on that process. Then I applied for the marriage one, and after thousands of dollars that you have to pay, then they lost everything. They didn't have anything. But you can't argue with them. There's no arguing. It's like, well, it's lost. I'm sorry. And it's your life that's at stake of being here or not. So then we hire lawyers, and really the lawyers around here don't get involved with immigration as much as like in states where there's a lot more people, like Florida or California. Then they're more well-versed. And we hire lawyers, and we paid them, and honestly, they didn't know what they were doing either. So nothing got out of that. Finally, we're like, okay, let's forget about all that and apply again and see what happens. So we sent everything again, and then I was able to go in and have an interview. The interview for marriage, when you want to become resident through marriage, they ask you a lot of questions. You have to prove that you're really getting married because you love the person, not because you want your papers. So I had to do that. We had kids, of course, by that time, because it was so many years later. And that to them wasn't even proof.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. How are you supposed to, what are you,
I have
what
no
kind of proof are they looking for?
I don't know. That to them was like, people have kids and they don't want to stay together. Like, that. Really?
That's kind of ludicrous.
Having a house, all those kinds of things weren't really, it wasn't proof to them, really. But actually, that was the first time we went to an interview. The second time, it was the lady that had been to Colombia, and because it was so many years later, she's like, okay, you've been together for so many years. Like, this, why are we even interviewing you?
How many kids did you have at this point?
At the point where we already had, well, our three kids together. Okay. So, yeah. And then I became a legal resident then. Which was, I don't know how many years ago, 5 maybe? I can't even remember the exact.
So, did you get married before you applied for residency, or did you have to wait until...
I got married before I applied.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I know some people, like, if they're in another country and they want to get married, they apply first and then they come here and get married, but... I was already here, and
right.
I got married, and then I applied for it.
We asked Michelle how it felt when she wasn't a legal resident, and if she had ever had fears of being deported.
Was that a real fear for you? Like, did you...
It wasn't like I was living in... No, I wasn't. Really, immigration doesn't go searching for you if you're not doing anything wrong.
If you're not in trouble.
If you're not in trouble. So it wasn't really afraid, that was going to happen. I was more, it was more depressing, the fact that I couldn't go back and see my family in Colombia, and I couldn't leave the country. It was kind of like I felt trapped. Like, I couldn't go anywhere. My family was traveling in different places, and I just, I was stuck in here. I couldn't go anywhere.
Right.
I could go anywhere in the country, just not out of the country, and I felt trapped. So that was mainly it. Of course, it was in the back of my head that someday I could, I don't know, things change and I would have to go back, but I wasn't like staying up at night or anything like that. Right. I lived my life like as if I was a legal resident.
Right.
After talking to Wendy and hearing about her experience, we asked Michelle if she too felt like her interviewer was treating her like she was a criminal.
I had a couple interviews because of our whole issues with, so the first time, yes, which was when they were asking, well, they, for that person that was interviewing us, even having kids or anything didn't, it wasn't good enough. Like, I did feel like they were... Yeah, they're not treating you like a human being. It's more of a person that is trying to do something wrong kind of thing. Which, I mean, in a way I understand they have such a responsibility to determine if somebody really, maybe, I guess, I don't know, deserves to be here or if they're doing it for the right reason. A lot of responsibility in their hands. But, I don't know, not everybody is a criminal.
Right, like they were assuming the worst of you from the beginning.
The second person I interviewed with, she wasn't like that, but she had been to Colombia traveling, and so then she was more personable.
We asked Michelle if there was any time where she felt that she was treated differently because she wasn't born in the U.S.
I personally didn't feel that way, but Scott mentioned a couple of times he felt that people were treating me that way. I didn't notice it, but he said, I know how I'm treated, and I know the difference. So, for example, at the bank here in Newburgh, he felt that I wasn't treated the way he is treated. I didn't notice it, but he notices things like that. Several years ago, things have changed now, but several years ago, like, if we were at the mall, and my parents didn't speak any English at the time, if we were speaking Spanish, people would walk by and yell at us and tell us, you're in the United States, you need to speak English. Like, just rude really? People like that, yes.
Like, people you didn't know would just yell dumb things like that.
Mm-hmm, yeah. But for the most part, I haven't felt anything.
You have not felt like an outsider?
No. I mean, culturally, for me, I did feel like an outsider, not because of other people making me feel like that, but because of living here is so different to where I was born, and the culture and the food and all that kind of stuff is so different. So that way I did feel like that, but not because of other people making me feel like that, if that makes sense.
So what are some of the cultural differences or some of the big things that you, or things that you got here and were like, what?
To me, this area is depressing compared to where I grew up. It really is. like nobody's outside, especially in the cold months. Colombia's very lively, and there's lots of music and color. Like, I just picture it like that. And here is more, it's depressing. It was very depressing when I moved here. I moved from Colombia to Miami. So Miami was, like, I was still in Colombia, really. Scott always says that he needed a translator when he was in Miami because everybody speaks Spanish. But moving here was really, really culture shock. Even though I had lived here when I was 14, I think at that age, you don't really realize. I mean, it was a new place. It was fun. Right. But as an adult, it was depressing. That's pretty much the difference. And, of course, there's foods here that are there that I can never get here until I go to Colombia. So
right.
I miss that.
Right. Winter is rough for you yet?
I definitely don't like the winter. I like the snow. It's pretty, but for Wendy.
The weather.
In December, it's all right.
Yes. The weather is definitely different. Bogota has spring kind of summerish weather all year round. So that's hard to give up.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Hopefully I can become a citizen soon. I mean,
do you want to?
I do. I just never did it because it's costly. And there's a lot of paperwork, and I never saw any benefit of becoming a citizen, really. But I do have to renew my green card status, so instead of paying for that, I might as well just become a citizen.
As you know, Michelle came from Colombia, so her primary language was Spanish. After living in a country where mostly English is spoken, we were wondering how much she uses Spanish these days.
So do you still speak Spanish with your parents, or are they fluent English speakers?
I speak Spanish with them. They speak English. I mean, they have jobs here that they have to speak English for, but it's easier, of course, for them to speak Spanish. So, yeah, I do speak Spanish with them. With my sister, I speak English.
So when did that change? Like, when did you and your sister transition from, or how did that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good question because I don't really know. When she moved here, when we all moved here, she started going to school in South High. And there, at the time, they did have the ESL or ELL or whatever that program is called. But she didn't know any English whatsoever. Scott would actually go to her school every lunch to kind of talk to her. She didn't have any friends or anything. And then I think she was like maybe 15. So when you're that age learning another language, it's pretty easy if you're immersed in it. And then I don't know exactly when we turned to speaking English. I don't know. That's what we speak most of the time, so then it's easier.
Right.
Do your kids speak pretty good Spanish?
No.
No.
Angie, she's the oldest. She can understand pretty much everything. Because, I don't know, things change with the kids. My first one, I was like, oh my goodness, she's going to know Spanish. And then it became really hard because Scott doesn't speak Spanish. So, and it's not like I see my family all the time. So, It was just easier to speak English. So she doesn't really speak it. She can try a little bit, but she doesn't. And then the boys, they don't know any.
You know, you're a nurse, right?
Yeah.
So, like, when you have patients who... I mean, do they call you in sometimes and say, like, can you talk to them because we can't, or?
Yes, but up until maybe a month ago, I was told I couldn't do that, that I had to have an interpreter regardless of me speaking their same language.
Really?
Yeah, because of laws and regulations that wanted to be, proven that I was, or that the person that was speaking to them actually knew the language well enough because being medical things. But I just found out a month ago that I actually can talk to them in my language, which is great because I'm like, that makes no sense. That's my first language. You should have an interpreter for my English.
Right? That doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's nice when we have patients that don't speak English and they speak only Spanish. Because I know, for example, for my grandma, when she was sick here, it's scary to go to the doctor, to the emergency room, or anywhere you're going and you don't speak the language and you have no idea what they're telling you or what they're doing. And,
right.
Yeah.
So were you actually not allowed to speak to them in Spanish, or you just couldn't? You still had to get a translator because what they told you wasn't official.
Yes. What they told me wasn't official.
Oh, okay. Got it. So you didn't have to struggle trying to speak English with them.
No. I could still speak Spanish, but okay. I still needed a translator.
Got it. To make it official.
Yeah.
Got it. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
And then, so what kind of... nurse, are you? Do you work in a like a doctor's office or the hospital?
I work at the hospital, mental health.
After we finished our interview with Michelle, we asked if there was one thing that she'd like people to know about immigrants or the immigration process. This is how she responded.
No, just what I mentioned before. I hear that a lot. People saying, "Well, why don't you do these the legal way?" Well, there isn't really a lot of times a legal way to do it. If there was, I'm sure that people would do it because it is not fun to be illegal. It's not fun to have to be here and be afraid. So I don't just get educated when people are going to say things like that.
That's all for today's episode of Denizen. Come back next week when we hear Robin's story.
My name is Robin, and my husband Greg and I adopted a little girl from Ghana, Africa, about just over 3 years ago now.
Thanks for listening to Denizen, where we tell the stories of people who inhabit this earth.